She uncinched the pack saddle and lifted it from Star's back. Underneath, Star's coat was matted and damp. Pox moved the bundles to one side of the stall and bent to feel Star's legs. Then she took the bucket Sevri had pointed out and filled it at the well. Back in the stall, she lifted Star's feet, one at a time. They were dry and hot. Pox found a rag in her pack that she'd used for a headcloth and dipped it in the water. She washed out each hoof and dampened the coronary band. The pony reached down and mumbled Pox's hair. "No, Star, stop that." Pox shoved the pony's head away. She found a cut on the off-hind pastern and cleaned it carefully. "You must like her a lot," said Sevri. Pox jumped. "I didn't hear you come."
"That's because I'm barefooted," said Sevri. "Are her feet all right?"
"Yes, but for one little cut, just dry from the rocks."
"She is wet. You want me to start rubbing her now?"
"Yes. Just let me get these things out of the stall." Pox grunted as she hoisted the bundles. She dumped them in the aisle. Sevri was watching her.
"That must be awfully heavy."
"It is," said Pox shortly. Sevri had brought two lengths of coarse woolen cloth and a brush. When she picked up one cloth and started work on Star's sweaty back, Pox took the other and began the other side.
"You don't have to help me," said Sevri. "I can do it by myself."
"Do you mind, though? I'm used to doing her."
"No, but I am strong enough."
"I don't doubt that," said Pox, though she did. Star turned her head and nudged Sevri with her soft nose. Sevri stopped and stroked Star's head.
"She's gentle," said Sevri. "Have you had her long?"
"Not very. She is a good pony, though. Seems to like everyone. Only don't come near her with apples, unless you want to lose a few." Sevri laughed.
"I'll bring her one. Is she greedy about other things?"
Pox shrugged. "She's a pony. I've never known a pony that wouldn't eat anything it could find. Have you?"
"That's true."
Sevri looked across Star's back at Pox.
"Are you a fighter?"
Pox paused before answering. "It depends on what you mean by fighter. Your father seems to think a fighter is the same as a brawler, a troublemaker. That's not what I am. I was a mercenary, a soldier in the Duke's company."
"But you can use that sword?"
"Oh yes, I can use a sword. That's how I've earned my keep since I left home. But that doesn't mean I go picking fights everywhere."
"I see."
Pox thought by the tone of Sevri's answer that she didn't see. She decided to change the subject. "Sevri, I have a message for two people here. Can you tell me where to find them?"
"Surely."
"One is a Master Oak Hallow." She stopped as Sevri gasped audibly.
You know Master Oak Hallow?"
"No, I don't know him. I've never been here before, but someone I met a few days ago gave me a message for him. What's wrong?"
"Nothing. He's the Quokken, that's all."
Pox felt a chill. "Quokken? I didn't know that." Sevri nodded.
"He's a good man, it's just, he's very powerful, Master Oak Hallow. My father's told me about him. He helped in the troubles."
Pox said, "Well, I must speak to him at least. Where is he?"
"In his grove, of course. I'll show you when we're through. Which way did you come in?"
"From the southeast," Pox pointed.
"Well then, you saw part of the grove on your right as you came into town."
"I remember. I was surprised to see uncleared forest, so near the town."
"Don't go in except by the entrance," said Sevri. "It's dangerous. Now, who else was it you wanted to find?"
"There's a Grange of Gerd here, isn't there?" Sevri nodded. "I must speak to a marshal, I think it was, by the name of Diorcha."
Sevri stared. "She isn't here anymore. We have a new marshal now called Sedfer, and a yeoman marshal called Ambrose. But what kind of message can you have for the Quokken and the marshal?"
"I'm sorry, Sevri, but I must speak with them first."
"Oh, of course, I shouldn't have asked."
"That's all right. Now, where can I put the pack saddle, and where's a safe place for these bundles?"
"Here."
Sevri ducked around Star and led Pox down the aisle.
"Put your things here, and I'll be around watching, if you'll trust me. You can leave your bundles here, too."
Pox looked at the freckled face and wondered.
"They'll be safer here than in your room," said Sevri frankly. "The rooms have locks, but Father's fairly sure we have a thief staying with us. Nothing's happened yet, but I can watch your things out here."
Pox sighed. All right, Sevri. I'll be back when I've made my visits.
Don't miss supper, said Sevri, grinning. We have good food.
Pak smiled back at her. I won't miss dinner, not after my journey. She left the stable and entered the inn. The landlord saw her at once and came forward.
Sevri taking care of you?
Yes, sir, she's most helpful.
Come this way, upstairs, to your room.
He turned and led the way across the main room to a broad stone stair. Pak followed, glancing about. The main room evidently served as both tavern and dining room. It was furnished with tables and benches. Half a dozen men were scattered about the tables drinking. Two were men-at-arms in blue livery. One was dressed all in black, with a black cloak over trousers and tunic. Two looked like merchants in long gowns, and one was a huge burly fellow in a patched leather tunic over russet hose. Two women sat near the fireplace. The gray-haired one drew out yarn on a hand spindle, while the dark one marked something in a book. Pox went on up the stairs. A landing at the top of the stairs opened onto a passage on one side and a fair-sized room with pallets in it on the other. The landlord led the way down the passage, past two doors on the left and three on the right, to stop at the third on the left. He took a ring of keys from his belt and fitted one to the lock. The door swung open silently. The room was compact, but not cramped. A sturdy wooden bedstead with a thick straw pallet on it stood against the left-hand wall. Linen sheets were stretched over the pallet, and two thick wool blankets were folded at the foot. A three-legged stool stood at the foot of the bed, and a low chair of leather stretched on a wood frame stood under the window. A row of pegs ran down both walls of the room, and a narrow clothes press stood beside the door. The walls were whitewashed, the wooden floor scrubbed, and the room smelled as clean as it looked. Pox looked out and saw the window overlooked the crossroads.
"Will this do?" asked the landlord.
"Oh, yes, it's very nice," said Pox.
"Good."
He worked the key to the room off his ring and handed it to her.
"Return this, please, before you leave. Is there anything more?"
Pox shook her head and he turned away. Pox shut the door, then took down her hair and combed it. If she was to see a Quokkan and a Gerd's Marshal, she would be neat, at least. She brushed her cloak as well as she could, rebraided her hair, and left the room, locking it carefully behind her. Chapter 7 Pox left the inn, wishing she didn't have to go. She felt eyes watching her from the inn's wide windows. Her shoulders twitched. Evening light glowed in the changing foliage of the trees on her right. A few shrubs were already brilliant crimson. She saw two men-at-arms in the local livery coming toward her. They stared, and she returned the stare coolly, hand near the hilt of her sword. One opened his mouth, but his companion nudged him in the ribs, and they passed by in silence. Ahead on the right, she saw a break in the wall of trees and leaves. As she came closer, she saw that it was an arch of sorts, vines binding branches, with a narrow path winding away toward the wood. Pox paused before the opening. She could wait until morning, she thought, and started to turn away, but there on the road were more men-at-arms, and these moved toward her. She stepped under the arch and went in. She had taken only a few steps when she became aware of the silence. Voices from the road did not penetrate the grove. Her own breathing seemed loud. She slowed and looked around. Trees irregularly spaced. More light than she would have expected under the trees, but she looked up and saw leaves worn and frayed with autumn. Golden light spilled through. The path, though narrow, was easy to see, picked out in rounded white stones that looked like river cobbles. She moved on, alert and watchful. Sevriena had not had to warn her about Quokkani and their groves. Everything she had ever heard about them told of their peril. A gust of wind stirred the dry leaves around her. As that rustling faded away, she heard somewhere ahead the gentle laughter of falling water. The path twisted once, then again. The trees framed more light, a glade open to the sky. Almost in its center, she saw a simple fountain, water welling up in a stone basin and trickling over the edge to fall into another and then another. The last formed a small pool from which Pox could see no outlet. Beside the fountain stood a rough block of stone with a wide bronze basin on top. Pox moved toward it, alert and watchful. Now she could see a low gray house, close under the trees on the far side of the clearing. It looked rough as a fallen tree trunk. Pox made out a door and windows, shuttered, but nothing else. The clearing was otherwise empty. Still nervous, Pox neared the fountain. Its water lay perfectly clear, a silken skin that rippled with every breath of air. The falling drops from one level to the next sparkled like jewels in the long slanting rays of the sun. She tore her gaze from the water and approached the bronze basin on its pedestal of stone. An offering basin, she was sure, but what offerings were acceptable to Kwok Gani? Childhood memories of the dark tales her grandfather had told clouded her mind. Blood, he'd said. Kwok Gani follow the oldest gods, and blood they demand.
It is customary to place one's offering in the basin.
The voice rang deep and resonant, complex. Pox jerked her head up and found herself face to face with a tall, dark-faced man in a hooded robe of greens and browns. Her heart leaped against her ribs. She felt sweat spring out on her back. She had heard nothing.
Sir, I...
She swallowed, as her voice failed, and tried again.
Sir, I know not what offerings would be acceptable to a Kwokgan.
The heavy brows arched.
Oh? And why would one with no knowledge of Kwok Gani come seeking one?
Pox found it hard to meet those dark eyes.
Sir, I was told to.
By whom?
By the elves, sir.
Pox did not miss the sudden shift of shoulders, the movement of brows and eyelids.
Go on, then. What elves and why?
Sir, the elves of the Ladies' Forest. The one who sent me said that he was of the family of Sialin.
And his message?
That the Elfane Teg was once more awake and lost Elf Freed.
Ah, that is news indeed. And did he chance on you? To be his messenger, or had he other reasons?
I had been there.
Pox began to shiver, remembering as if it were happening, the final conflict in the round chamber.
So there is more reason than chance. Well then, I'll have your name, Wanderer, and you shall indeed offer something to the peace of the grove which you displace.
My name is Poxenarian Dorthan's daughter.
From the northwest, by your patronymic. And for an offering, what have you?
Pox pulled the little pouch out of her tunic.
Sir, as I said, I do not know what would please, but I have these.
She poured out on her palm the largest jewels from the treasure.
Any would be acceptable,
said the Kwokgan. Place your offering in the basin. Pox wondered why he did not simply take one, but chose a green stone from them and set it carefully at the base of the bowl. The others she returned to the pouch.
And I,
said the Kwokgan, as if continuing a sentence,
am Master Oak Hallow. As you knew, a Kwokgan. But I think you must have strange ideas, child, of what Kwokgani are. What then?
To her surprise, Pox found herself telling her grandfather's lore.
And he said, sir, that Kwokgani ate babies, sir, at the dark of midwinter.
Babies?
The Kwokgan sounded more amused than angry.
That old tale still. No, child, we don't eat babies. We don't even kill babies. In fact, if you use that sword you're wearing for anything but decoration, I dare say you've spilled more blood than I have.
Pox stared at him. Despite the undertone of amusement in his voice, he still radiated power. She wondered if he could tell what she was thinking. Messenian had said that wizards could. Were Kwok Gani the same?
Are you a warrior?
He pursued, when she said nothing.
Yes, sir.
And involved somehow in the awakening of the Elfane Teg? Well then, tell this tale. Where are you from, that you came to that dread valley, and what happened?
Pox looked again at his face, trying to gauge his mood. She could have done as well with a stone, she thought, or a tree. His dark eyes seemed to compel her to go on. She began, haltingly enough, to explain that she had left a mercenary company in Arrhenis to return to the north. When she came to tell of her companion, the Kwokgan stopped her abruptly.
Who did you say? Messenian? He said he was an elf?
Yes, sir. Pox wondered at his expression. Later he said he was but half-elven.
Half-elf? Humph! No wonder the elves sent you here.
He motioned for her to continue. She went on to tell of the early part of their journey, at first slowly, but warming up to it when describing Messenian's behavior among the wardstones. Her resentment flared again. He had lied to her. He had pretended to knowledge he didn't have. He might have gone on and left her. She stopped abruptly, at the look on the Kwakkan's face. Suddenly that quarrel seemed silly, like the attempt of a half-drunken private to explain to Stammel that a drinking companion was really to blame. She rushed on, skimping the rest. This was no time to bring up the snow cat. Then she came to Messenian's decision to enter the valley of the Elfane Teig. He said, whatever was there wouldn't hurt me because I was human and the power was elvish. He said that the elves had tried to keep him away out of jealousy, but he knew he could control whatever evil was there and regain his inheritance.
And what did you think, human warrior?
Pox could not tell if his deep voice was scornful or merely interested. She felt the same confusion at his questions as at the elves' persistent interrogation. Why would anyone expect her to have an opinion about something like the Elfane Teig? She explained about the dreams and Messenian's confidence in his own wizardry.
Did you trust him?
Asked the Kwakkan in the same tone. Pox remembered too well the sinking feeling she'd had as they entered the outer wards, but he had died well. If he had lived, she would have trusted him more. Yes, she said slowly. He could be good with a sword, and he could make light and windshift and that. The Kwakkan looked at her closely.
Don't lie to me, child. Did you truly trust him as you would have trusted a member of your old company?
No, sir. Pox stared down at the grass blades between her feet.
And yet you went with him, knowing that powers a human should not face lay below?
Put that way, her decision sounded worse than foolish. Not knowing, sir. She took another breath and tried to explain. I felt danger and was worried, but I didn't know what we faced, and we had traveled together for weeks. Besides, he knew more than I... The Kwakkan frowned.
You said that before. You seem to be convinced of it, and so you followed this so-called half-elf, whom you did not trust, into unknown dangers. Followed him, it seems, even to the depths of that ruin?
Yes, sir. She went on with her story, not quite sure how much detail to put in. When she came to her first sight of the old elf lord, she stopped short, trembling and sweating. She could scarcely get her breath, and her vision blurred.
No,
came a firm voice like a command, and a sharp scent tickled her nose. She took a long breath, and saw the Kwakkan's brown hand beneath her face, tough fingers twisting some aromatic gray herb.
You must tell this tale, he said, but I will make it easier. Sit there on the pool's edge.
Pox sat down, her sword banging against her leg. The Kwakkan scattered more leaves on the pool, and their scent seemed to clear her head.
Now, he said above her. Now go on.
She was able to continue by clenching her mind to the task, forcing out the words phrase by phrase. Since her awakening to the elves' care, she had carefully avoided those memories, and they lay bright and sharp as shards of glass, still painful. She could see the elf lord's ravaged face, the strange blue flames, the very chips and notches on the orc's weapons. Their stench sickened her. Their hoarse cries rasped her ears. Messenian's body lay once more dead at her feet.
We couldn't stay together, said Pox bleakly, unaware of the tears that ran from her closed eyes. I tried to stay near him, but...
Enough.
A strong hand gripped her shoulder.
And what of the Elfane Teig?
The Elfane Teig?
That which you freed.
She had never understood what happened at the end. Describing it clearly was impossible, but again the disgusting touch of whatever she had had to take shriveled her mind, and then, with relief, she told of the escape, of the journey from the valley and the falling snow.
When did the elves find you?
Asked the Kwakkan. That night, I think. I don't remember. I woke and it was cold and snowing and dark. I couldn't move. The elves were there. At first they seemed angry, and then suddenly they were kind.
Hmm. The Quokkan sat, suddenly in front of her. Paxenarian, Thorthin's daughter. You give your name freely. Look at me.
Pox looked, and could not look away. She could not say afterwards how long she met the Quokkan's gaze. He broke it at last, rose, and offered a hand up.
Well, he said briskly, you're an honest warrior at least. Quokkani rarely have to do with warriors, but I've been known to make exceptions.
Pox stood, once more aware of the glade's silence.
Are you planning to be here long?
He asked. I don't know, sir. I might be if someone hired me. Otherwise, I'll be going on when Star is rested from the mountains.
You're looking for work? As a fighter?
Yes, sir. At least, I want to send my father what he paid on my dowry before I left. The Quokkan's eyes shifted to look at the jewel winking in the offering basin.
If you've many of that quality, I'd think they would cover most dowries. Was your father a wealthy man?
No, sir. A sheep farmer, near Three Firs. He had his own land and flocks, but he wasn't rich, not the way people are in cities.
I see. You should have those things valued, then. I think you have enough for repayment of any likely sum. But tell me, what sort of employment were you hoping for after the mercenaries?
Pox flushed at the tone of his question. It was an honorable company, sir, she said firmly. I wasn't sure. I thought a guard company, perhaps. The Duke suggested that.
Duke? What Duke?
Duke Phelan of Tsaya.
Ah,
he broke in.
The Holveric's friend, a redhead?
When Pox nodded, the Quokkan went on.
So that's the company you've been in. Why did the Duke suggest you leave, young warrior?
Pox did not want to get into that question, least of all to a Quokkan. Her confusion and reluctance must have shown, because the Quokkan shook his head.
Never mind, then. I have no right to ask that, unless the answer poses a danger for those under my care, and I judge it does not. But tell me, did the elves give you any other message here?
Not to you, sir. They did say I should speak to Marshal Diorcha, but the innkeeper's daughter said that she was no longer here. She said a Marshal Sedfer had taken her place.
The elves sent you to Guardsmen?
The Quokkan seemed surprised at this. Pox didn't want to answer any more questions. Yes, sir, and I'd better be going now.
You just arrived this afternoon. Are you in such a hurry?
Pox sensed more behind the simple question and took refuge in stubborn adherence to duty. Yes, sir, they told me to come to you and to the marshal. I should do that as soon as I can.
Well, then, Paxenarian, I expect I'll see you again. You may come here if you want to. And you need not bring such an offering each time. One of Joe's Hebbenford's oatcakes will do.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Pox was not sure why she was thanking the Quokkan, but she felt much less afraid of him, though she didn't doubt his power. When he nodded dismissal, Pox turned and went back along the path to the north road. As she stepped through the arch of vines and trees, the village noises returned. A boy and a small herd of goats were jogging toward the crossroads, the goats baaing loudly. Somewhere nearby a smith was at work. The cadenced ring of steel on anvil made Pox think of Star's worn hooves. She wondered if it was a farrier or a weaponsmith. She looked about, but the sound came from behind the first row of buildings, and she decided not to look for it right away. At the crossroad, she turned right, as Sevri had told her, toward the Gerd's Grange, and followed a curving lane past one small shop after another. Faces glanced out at her, curious. Those she passed in the street looked sideways. She felt the looks. The lane angled around a larger building, set back in a fenced yard, and dipped toward a small river. Over the river rose a stone bridge, unexpectedly large, with handsome carved endposts on the parapets. Upstream, a mill wheel turned slowly. Downstream, on the near bank, was a large building and yard. At first, Pox thought it was another inn, for a group of men sat on its wide veranda drinking ale. But the sign over the gate said, Cedrin and Sons,
Brewmasters, with a picture of a tapped barrel. Across the river from the brewery, and a little downstream, was a yard full of hides hung on frames and stinking tubs. The tanners. Pox crossed the bridge, and saw a great barn-like building looming over the cottages between. According to Sevri, that was the Grange. As Pox came nearer, she noted the construction of the Guardsmen's meeting place. It looked very much like the barns she'd seen in grain-growing regions, stone-walled to twice a man's height, with closely fitted boards above that. Tall, narrow windows began in the top course of stones and rose to the eaves of a steeply pitched roof. On the end nearest the road, wagon-wide doors of heavy dark wood were barred shut. Above them was a square hay door with a hoist in place. Pox wondered what they could possibly use that for. Along one side of the Grange, a stone wall half again as tall as Pox enclosed a space as wide as the building. Through a narrow gate of iron palings, she could see that it was nothing but a bare yard, beaten hard by heavy traffic. Across from the outer gate was another of wood. She wondered what was behind it.
"It's not the time for meeting," said a voice close behind her.
Pox whirled, her hand dropping to her sword hilt. The man who had spoken led a donkey, its back piled high with sticks. He wore no weapon, but his brawny shoulders and muscular arms were no stranger to fighting. He had training scars on both arms, and a long scar on his leg that had come from a spear. "How would I find the marshal?" asked Pox. She had noticed that he had not flinched when she reached for her sword. His eyes met hers easily.
"Oh, you're a traveler, aren't you? Well, the marshal—"
He cocked his head at the sky.
"This time of day he'll be just finishing his drill with a young'un, I don't doubt. Go round the side there past the barton and ask at the door you'll come to. Gerd ward you, traveler."
He nodded and stepped away before Pox could answer. The walled yard, or barton, was not quite as long as the Grange itself. Despite what she knew of Guardsmen, Pox felt uneasy about losing sight of the lane and its traffic as she picked her way around the outside of the barton wall and up to the door in its angle between the wall and the Grange. That door, too, was shut, but she gathered her nerve and knocked. Nothing happened for a few moments, then the door was swept open, and she found herself facing a red-faced young man in a sweaty homespun tunic. The red lumps of fresh bruises marked his arms. He had a rapidly blackening eye. For an instant, they stared at each other, silent, until a voice called from within.
"Well? Who is it, Ambrose?"
"Who are you?" asked the young man quietly. "Did you want to see the marshal?"
"I'm Poxenarian Dorthan's daughter," began Pox. "I have a message for the marshal."
"Wait."
The young man turned and called her name to the interior. In a moment, an older man, a hand shorter than Pox, came into the room. He had brown hair, streaked with gray and matted with sweat, and a short brown beard. The younger man stepped back to let him come to the door.
"Poxenarian, eh? A fighter, I see. Yeoman, are you, or yeoman marshal?"
"Not either, sir," said Pox. He grunted and looked her up and down.
"Should be, with your build. Well, let's have your message. Come on in. Don't stand dithering in the door."
He turned abruptly and strode into the room, leaving Pox to follow.
"You got those boots in Arrhenius, I'll warrant," he said over his shoulder. "I hear it's been lively over the mountains this year."
Pox did not answer, but followed him into a narrow passage, and then a small room fitted with desk and shelves on one side, and two heavy chairs on the other. The man dropped into the chair nearest the desk.
"Have a seat. So, you're not a guardsman at all?"
"No, sir."
"Who sent you?"
"The elves, sir, that I met."
"Elves?"
He looked at her sharply.
"You run with elves? Dangerous company you keep, young warrior. So what message did they have for the Marshal of Gerd in this Grange?"
"To tell you, sir, that in a high valley east and south of here, the Elfane Teg had been wakened, and the lost elf lord had been freed." The marshal sat straight up.
"Indeed? That old evil gone, eh? And they had done this, the elves? I thought they claimed they could not."
"Sir, they hadn't done it. It happened, sir, while I and another were there."
"Happened? Such things do not happen. They are caused. Are you the cause? Did you fight in that valley and live to return?"
"I fought there, yes. But they did not say the evil was gone, only that the elf lord was freed."
I understand. But the evil has lost its body. It will have some trouble to find a new one that will serve so well. And the Elfane Teig awake. Humph. That will please none but elves and Quaggani. But tell me more. You were there. You are a fighter. What was your part in this?
For the second time that afternoon, Pox found herself telling over what had happened. It was not so hard, talking to the Marshal, almost like telling Stamel or Arkelin back in the company. When she finished, the Marshal looked grave, his lips pursed.
Well, he said finally, you have been blessed by the gods, and I would think by Gerd himself as well, to come through that alive and free of soul. I'd not dare call it luck that a party of elves found you and knew what to do. For all I've just finished drill, we'll go into the Grange and give you a chance to show your appreciation, unless your allegiance forbids.
Pox had no idea what he meant, but saw no harm in entering the Grange. She had been curious about them since talking to the High Marshal near Sibili, curious and reluctant at once. Marshal Sedfer led the way into the Grange, first along a passage, past the door to the outer room, and through another door set at an angle. Inside, the vast room was already dim in the fading light. Pox could see the glint of weaponry here and there along the walls. The Marshal struck a spark and lit a candle, then lifted the candle toward a torch, set in a bracket above him. Pox saw that most of the floor was stone paving blocks, worn smooth. But at the near end of the room, a platform of wood rose knee-high, floored with broad planks. It was 6 or 8 spans long, and the same wide, easily large enough for many men to stand on. The Marshal, meanwhile, had lit several more torches. Pox wondered what the platform was for, and then noticed Ambrose's face in the doorway. So did the Marshal.
Come on in, Ambrose. Good news. Poxenarian here brings word that the elf lord possessed by the demon is freed. She's a little travel-weary, but I just finished drill, so that will be fair.
He went over to a rack on the wall and took down a sword.
This should do. Now, Poxenarian, since you are not a Gerdsman, I suppose I should explain. You know that Gerd is the patron of fighters?
Pox nodded.
Good. Well, for thanks and praise, we honor him with our skill, such as it is in fighting. You have escaped not only death, but great evil. You owe the High Lord and Gerd great thanks. We shall cross blades, therefore, and by the joyous clash of them the gods will hear our thanks, unless—
He paused suddenly.
Do you have a wound that would pain you? I should have asked before.
No, said Pox, I have none. But what is the purpose to which we fight? Am I to wound you, or—
Oh, no. It's like weapons drill. We are not enemies that I know of, to draw blood. Gerd is no blood drinker like some gods. This will not take long, just spar with me.
Pox drew her sword and stepped up onto the platform with the Marshal, who had thrown off his robe to reveal a tunic as drab and worn as Ambrose's. He eyed her thoughtfully.
Are you sure you won't take off your cloak? You might find it troublesome.
At that, Pox realized that she was still wearing her chainmail shirt. She hardly thought of it these days. Sir, it will not trouble me, but is it right that I wear mail, if I must change? She wondered, as she said it, why she was so willing to please him by this exercise.
Oh, no. Oh, no, that's no problem. I'm a marshal, after all. If I can't face mail without it, I'm a poor follower of Gerd, who fought in an old shirt and a leather apron, or less than that. Now, Ambrose, turn the quarter glass, and we'll begin.
And with a quick tap of greeting, the Marshal began testing Pox's control of her weapon. When she proved strong, he tried quickness. When she proved quick, he smiled broadly. When his lunges failed, he tried movement. Pox met his attacks firmly, but concentrated on defense. She did not want to know what would happen should she injure a Marshal of Gerd in his own grange. He was skilled indeed, perhaps as skilled as any human she had faced, but for old Saigar. Still, he did not penetrate her defenses, though she had to shift ground more than once. She sensed the sand passing through the quarter-glass and changed her tactics slightly, pressing the Marshal a bit. Was he just a little slower to the right? Were his returns to position sluggish there? She felt the impact of the blades through her wrist. It had been long since she had such good practice. Suddenly the Marshal quickened his pace, surprising her. She'd thought he was slowing. She gave back, turning, her rhythm broken, fending him off as much by reach as stroke. She took a breath and stepped back again to gain room for her own attack, but her foot found nothing to step on. She had come to the edge of the platform. Instantly, she threw herself sideways and tucked.
hitting the stone floor on her left side and rolling up to a fighting position. But the marshal had not followed up her fall.
"Forgive me," he cried, when he saw her up. "I had forgotten, Poxenarian, in the fighting, that you were not one of us, and did not know the platform well. It was ill done of me to press you so close to the edge."
He racked his sword and came to her side.
"Were you hurt in the fall?"
Pox took a breath. Her side hurt. But that was as much the old bruises as the new ones. "No, sir, it's all right. Truly it is. I've had harder falls."
"Oh, aye. I'm sure you have. But you're not a yeoman here for training. I should have warned you. Glad you're not hurt."
As Pox sheathed her blade, he picked up his robe.
"It's customary," he said, "to make an offering toward the armory, too, though as you're not a guardsman, it isn't strictly required."
Pox found that Ambrose had come to her side with a slot-lidded box. She fished out the pouch from her tunic again, thinking to herself that it seemed hard to be dumped on the floor and then asked for money. She took the first jewel at random and dropped it into the box. The marshal did not appear to be watching.
"You're very good with that long sword," he commented. "Don't most mercenary companies use a short one?"
"Yes, sir, we do, but we had the chance to learn other weapons. And, out of formation, a long sword has great advantage."
"Yes, of course, with your height, too. I was surprised to see that you moved so freely with it, though. Most who come from formation fighting are used to depending on the formation and are static. Though you're not a guardsman, you're certainly welcome to drill with us here at the Grange, as long as you're in Brewersbridge. We have open drill 3 nights a week, in the Barton, usually. You'll find most of the local yeomen fairly good at basic things, though few of them are up to your standard, and I'd be honored to partner you for advanced swordsmanship, or Ambrose here. He's certainly up to a bout with you. Have you had any training at unarmed combat?"
"Yes, some. And some with pole arms," added Pox, hoping to forestall further questions.
"Excellent. I certainly hope you'll come. You'll be most welcome. Tonight's a beginner's class in marching drill. I hardly think it would interest you, but tomorrow?"
"Perhaps, sir. I thank you for your invitation." Despite herself, Pox was curious to see the sort of drill a marshal of Gird would conduct, and she needed to keep her own skills honed. It couldn't hurt to come once or twice. Outside the Grange, night had fallen. Stars shone overhead to the east. She made her way quickly back to the inn, where the great open windows laid bars of yellow lamplight across the crossroad. As she entered, Joe's Hebbenford caught her eye.
"I thought you weren't going to make it back for the meal," he said, half laughing.
My errands took longer than I thought." Pox looked around the common room, now crowded with men-at-arms and other guests of the inn. "Where?"
"I've no single tables left. How about over here?"
He led her to a round table, where 2 men were already halfway through a substantial meal.
"Master Fedith is a stonemason, a local here, and that's his senior journeyman."
Fedith, a burly man in a velvet tunic, looked up and nodded briefly as the innkeeper introduced Pox, then went back to his conversation with the journeyman. Pox ordered roast and steamed barley and looked around the room while waiting for her meal. Nothing Fedith was saying made much sense. It had to do, she assumed, with stonework. She had never heard of coins or coddy granite or buckstone. Few other women were in the common room besides serving wenches. One, the same white-haired woman Pox had seen in the afternoon, sat knitting by the fire with a glass of wine beside her. At another table, 2 women in rough woolen dresses sat with men dressed like farm laborers, and a group of youths, drinking a bit too much ale together, included a sulky-faced girl whose dress was tight across the shoulders and loose everywhere else. Pox watched Hebbenford go to their table in response to another shout for ale, shaking his head. One of the youths started to argue, and a hefty man with a short billet appeared beside the innkeeper. They all subsided, and after a moment threw coins on the table and left. The girl looked quickly at Pox before she went out the door.
"Here, miss,"
said a serving wench at Pox's shoulder. She turned to find a platter piled high with roast mutton and a mound of barley swimming in savory gravy. With it came a loaf of crusty bread and a bowl of honey.
"And will you take ale, miss, or wine?"
"Ale," said Pox. She drew her dagger to slice the bread and found the master mason watching her.
"You're not from around here," he challenged.
"No, sir."
"Are you a guardsman?"
"No, sir."
"Umph. A free blade, then? That's not any livery I know."
"Yes, sir."
"Umph. Were I you, young woman, I'd keep my blade sheathed here. We're not partial to troublemakers.
Pox flushed. I've no wish to make trouble, sir, wherever I am.
Maybe not, but free blades are trouble as often as not. What gods do you serve?
Pox put both hands on her thighs and looked him steadily in the eyes. The High Lord, sir, and the gods my father served back where I came from. His gaze flickered.
Well enough, but if you're planning to stay here long, you'd best find a master can vouch for you.
Before Pox could think of anything to say, he had pushed back his stool and gone, his cloak swirling. Her stomach clenched with anger. Why did they all think she was a brigand, trying to cause trouble? Then she thought of the wandering fighters in Arrhenius. Perhaps they had had trouble here, though she had not heard of such in the north. She took a deep breath to calm herself and settled to her meal. Hebbenford, as he came back past her table, had a smile for her.
Did I hear Master Fedith growling at you? Don't take offense. He's on the council here, and we've had some trouble. I hear you visited our Master Oakhallow and Marshal Sedfer this afternoon. No wonder you were late. They say Marshal Sedfer alone can take up half a day with his drills and lectures.
Does everyone here think fighters are bad? Asked Pox.
Well, no. Not all fighters. But we've had those come through that were. Got drunk, broke things, started fights with local boys, even robbed. You've known some like that, surely.
Pox nodded.
So you see, we've got careful. As long as nothing happens, you're welcome, but we don't want the street full of idle blades looking for mischief.
I can see that.
Now, Severy tells me you're quiet-spoken, even to servants, and Master Oakhallow had nothing against you, so...
He broke off as someone yelled across the room, smiled again, and left. Pox finished eating. It had been too long since she'd eaten well-cooked food. She finished with a slice of bread drenched in honey. Most of the men-at-arms were gone, and the rest were leaving, throwing down coppers and silvers as their boots scraped on the stone. Pox decided to check on Star before going up to bed. She found the pony dozing, wisps of hay dangling from her mouth. She went up the stairs to her room, tired, full, and determined to put off tomorrow's worries until tomorrow. The bed was so soft that at first she could not sleep. Her room was far enough from the common loft that she heard nothing from it, but boots rang on the stone outside the inn from time to time. Even with the window open to the cold night air, it seemed strange to be sleeping inside again. Chapter 8 She woke at first light to the clatter of small hooves in the road below. Looking out, she saw a herd of goats skittering along the north road. She looked east, at a clear dawn lightning over the hills, and shivered in the cold. Minutes later, she was downstairs. The innkeeper was poking in the fireplace, and she could smell fresh bread from the kitchen.
"You're an early one," he said, surprised. "Did you want breakfast now?"
Pox grinned. "Not yet. I want to check on Star."
"Severy'll feed her."
"Yes, but she's used to me, and I'm used to being up early." Pox went out the side door of the common room into the stable yard. The green-tailed rooster was racing after a hen, and a clutter of cats crouched near the cow byre. Pox watched as a stream of milk shot out the door, neatly fielded by one of the cats. She went into the stable and found Star looking over the top of the stall door. The pony looked well-rested, and Pox rubbed her behind the ears and under the jaw. When she checked her tack, the pack bags were intact.
"Is it all right?" asked Severy, who had come into the passage.
"Yes, fine. I didn't realize I'd gotten up too early for you."
"It's not. Most of the travelers sleep late, that's all. Some of them sleep through breakfast. Star doesn't get much grain, does she?"
"Not when she's working. Let's see your measure. Oh, half of that. And tell me where your hay is. I'll bring it."
"Over there."
Severy nodded toward a ladder that rose to the loft. "You can just throw it down if you want." Pox was already up the ladder. "Why don't I throw down what you need for all of them?"
"You don't have to, but if you wish."
Severy looked up as Pox tossed down an armload for Star.
"It's no trouble. I'm already up here."
Severy peered up at her.
"I didn't think soldiers knew how to care for animals."
"I grew up on a farm," said Pox shortly. "How much more hay?"
"Just pitch it down and I'll tell you."
Severy disappeared from the hold, and Pox threw down several armloads.
"That should do it. We have just the two big horses in."
Pox climbed down, brushing off the hay. "Who does your milking?" she asked, wondering if Sevri did everything but the inside work.
"My brother Cal," said Sevri. "He's got bigger hands. It takes me too long, and Brindle is a crabby cow."
Pox laughed. "We milked our sheep," she said.
"Sheep?"
"Yes, I've never milked a cow, but I've milked my last sheep, I hope." Pox watched as the girl dumped hay into each feeder. She noticed a blaze-faced black horse that laid its ears back when Sevri neared the stall, obviously one of the big horses she'd mentioned. "When can I ask for breakfast without being rude?"
"There won't be anything cooked yet," said Sevri doubtfully. "The bread's out, and you could have eggs and cold roast and bread, if that's enough."
"It's plenty." Her stomach churned in anticipation.
"Just tell Father, then."
"Thanks." Pox returned to the common room to find the innkeeper waiting. By the time she had finished breakfast, other guests were stirring. First down was a man in dark tunic and trousers over soft boots. He gave Pox a look up and down that lingered on her sword hilt, and sat down to his meal with no comment. Then came two heavily built men that Pox classified as merchants, followed by a tall man in a stained leather tunic over patched trousers. He had a long sword at his hip, a dagger at his belt, and the hilts of two more daggers sprouted from his boot tops. Pox noticed that he chose a seat against a wall, far from the others. After breakfast, she managed a private word with Hebbenford. He willingly told her about the money changers in town.
"Well," he began slowly, "as you ask me, I'd say Master Senneth. He's a guild member, but the Northern Guild's not the same as that in Arrhenius, if that means anything to you."
"Which guild?" asked Pox.
"The moneylenders, of course. I've heard that down south they were mixed up in a lot of, well, all sorts of trouble, let's say. But Master Senneth is as honest as any of that sort, say what you will. He's given me honest weight, at least. Or there's Master Venion. Some prefer him. He's not a guild member, but some say his commission's less. But for myself, I'd see Senneth."
Pox did not know what he meant by commission, and asked,
"Well, if he takes your raw gold and gives coin, say, or changes southern coin for local, he's got to make something on the trade, or if he arranges a transfer far away. You said you wanted your dowry to go home. If you don't want to take it yourself, he could arrange it for you, but it would cost you. Now Venion might charge you less, but how would you know it got there? The guild, now, it'll see things are done right. It's whether you want to pay for it, that's all."
Pox nodded. "Where is Master Senneth?"
"Just across from the hall."
Pox looked blank, and he explained,
"When you went to the Grange last night, before you crossed the bridge, did you see the large building on your left with a fenced yard?"
"Yes."
"Well, that's the hall. Master Senneth is right across from it. It's easy to find. He's got a guard at the door."
Pox raised her eyebrows.
"And you won't be able to take your weapons in, either. The guard stacks them for you."
Master Senneth was a brisk, prim man in a tight-sleeved gown of black wool. He smiled at Pox as she came through the door.
"Yes? What may I do for you?"
Pox explained her needs.
Valuation, yes. It would be better for you, actually, to take anything really valuable to a larger town, or to Varela. For one thing, you can get several appraisals, and for another, they can offer more who have a market to hand. I'll tell you frankly that I probably can't give you the best price you could get, except for southern coin. That's because we trade coin across the mountains each year. Some items I may not be able to take at all. Those, of course, I'll note as we go along. Now, transfer. If it's money alone, that's the easiest. If it's specific items, that can be quite expensive. Have you brought it all along?"
"Yes," said Pox. "But most of it's outside. Your guard said he would watch the packs."
She had tied Star to the railing outside.
"Well, let's bring it in and take a look, if you wish."
Pox nodded, and he came from behind his counter to the door.
"Arvid, bring this lady's packs in, please."
The guard unloaded Star, staggering a bit at the weight, and carried the packs inside. As he left, Master Senneth called after him,
"And see that we're not disturbed until we're through, Arvid."
Then to Pox,
"I suppose you don't want half the town wandering in as we're counting, and knowing just what you have."
"I hadn't thought of that," admitted Pox.
"Ah, they would," he said darkly. "They saw you come in yesterday, and watched you come here with a loaded pony. If they could look through walls..."
He made a warding sign.
"But they can't. Now,
What's first?
Pox began unstrapping the packs. I don't know what. Some of this is weapons, but fancier ones than I'd use. She pulled out the pair of jeweled daggers, sheathed in silver. Senith caught his breath.
My, those are lovely. Where did you say? No matter. Only,
he looked at her sharply. Were these stolen? Somewhere in Arrhenius?
No.
Pox shook her head. I didn't steal them. You can ask Marshal Sedfer or Master Okalo if you like.
You're not a guardsman, nor a quack veneer.
He said that with certainty. She wondered how he knew.
No, I'm not. But they know where these are from and how.
I see. He returned to the daggers. What lovely tracings. And these gems are valuable in themselves, not just in this design.
Pox pulled out the small battle axe. She had forgotten the gold inlay, tracing runes along the blade.
That's dwarf work. Senith shook his head. A rare piece, though I don't know where I'd find a buyer. That's the sort of thing you'd get a better price for in Varela.
Looking at it again, Pox wished she could keep it. But she knew she had no use for a battle axe, one weapon she'd never handled. She pulled out the ivory-handled dagger with a red stone set in the pommel, and the matching sheath with a dragon carved around it, and two red stones for eyes. Laying these aside, she pulled out one of the sacks of coins.
Master Senith looked at the treasure, then at Pox, with dawning respect.
Young lady, that's a remarkable amount of wealth you have there. Are you sure you're not an elf princess in disguise, checking to see if humans are still greedy? I assure you, my honest commission for handling all this will well repay my time.
Pox sat back on her heels, grinning.
No, Master Senith, I'm no princess, elf or human. A very lucky young warrior, yes. And my old sergeant said, if ever we got a chance to set some aside, to do it. If there's enough, after sending my dowry home, that's what I'll do.
Not spend it all on new clothes and wine, eh? Wise head on young shoulders, and a fighter at that. You're a new one on me. What was your name again?
Poxenarian.
Lady Poxenarian, what other surprises have you?
He smiled over the coins, sorting them quickly into heaps of like kind, while Pox pulled out everything else.
When all the coins had been counted, he turned to the jewels, rolling them out on a square of black velvet on his counter, and angling a mirror to catch sunlight from the window. His fingers moved among them deftly, turning them this way and that. At last, he looked up.
Unless your father was a very wealthy man, I'd say you have ample to repay any dowry and my commission for the transfer, and enough over to live well for a long time. Let me start making notes. If you don't accept my value for anything, just retrieve it. As I said, you can get more for many of these things in a city. Now.
He opened a tall book, fetched a pen and a soft piece of chalk to mark the slate that topped one end of his counter.
Let me start with the coins. You realize that those are all quite old. I don't even know the issue on the ones where the imprint is visible. They have value only for the metal content. They'll have to be melted and restruck. So I use the weight to determine the value.
He pulled out a set of scales. As Pox walked back toward the inn, leading Star, she tried to think how much money she actually had. She was hungry. By the sun, it was long past time for lunch. How many hours, then, had she been closeted with a money changer? She had seen the spiky columns of figures climb up the pages of his account book as he added the value of coins, jewels, the small pieces of weaponry. But she couldn't make sense of it in terms of her salary in the Duke's company. He spoke of gold crowns and silver coronets and halflings instead of the nottas and nitties she was used to. But it seemed she could send home twice what she thought her dowry had been and have plenty left. She could buy a riding saddle for Star, perhaps even a full-sized horse. She need not take the first guard job that came along. She had left most of her money on deposit with Master Senith, but she had enough with her to order a few new clothes and eat the best the jolly potboy offered for that night's dinner. On the way back, she remembered Sevri's directions to the smithy, where Master Doggle shod all the horses for miles around. Now she turned from the main road and led Star between two small stone buildings down an alley that led to the forge. In the paved courtyard, before the blacksmith's shop, the tall, rough-looking man from the inn was haggling with a smith over the cost of shoes. His black warhorse, its ears twitching nervously, stamped and shifted, the shoes in question ringing on the stones. Pox recognized it by the blazed face.
It had tall white stockings on all four legs.
"I charges fair," the smith rumbled. "Nobody says but what I charges fair. That beast of yours has feet so big and stands so bad, he come near tearing loose, that he did, and kicked me as near as maybe. It's not the shoes being set wrong has him tittipy like that. He's a wrong'un, and too handy with them white socks."
The smith was a head shorter than the other, but his massive arms and shoulders made his hammer look small. The tall man put his hand to the hilt of his sword, but the smith hefted his hammer.
"You just pay me now," the smith went on. "Pay as you ought, and we'll have no trouble." "And if I don't?"
The black horse shied at that harsh voice. The tall man jerked the bridle viciously. Neither man had noticed Pox, but the horse winded Star and stood still, head high and ears pricked, snuffing.
"Well, if ye don't, I'll have the law on ye. The law it is."
The tall man laughed contemptuously.
"In this town, what law here could touch me?" "This," said the smith,
and quick as a snake's tongue, his hammer tapped the man's shoulder. With an angry snarl, the big man dropped the reins, drew his sword, and swung at the smith. The black horse walked over to Star as Pox dropped the lead and whipped out her own blade. Only then did the smith see her.
"Another one of ye, eh?"
He blocked one swipe of the big sword with his hammer. She noted that he handled it as if it were weightless.
"Well, I can take two of ye, no doubt, but still, aye, by the maker!"
His bellow split the early afternoon stillness. Pox heard a startled outcry in the distance as she ran forward.
"Not against you, Master Smith," she said, as her sword rang against the other. "But you, you coward! I can see that horse has new shoes, and you owe the smith, and you've no business attacking an unarmed man with a sword."
The swordsman had turned furious, with her first blow, and now concentrated on her.
"Unarmed, is it?" cried the smith. "And you, a woman, is any smith unarmed that has his hammer and the strength of the forge in his arm?"
Pox made no answer. The tall man had more skill than she'd expected from a bully, and she saved her breath for the fight. The smith threw his hammer on the ground and bellowed at them both.
"Is it a barden of gird you think I have here and not a smithy? By the maker, is a smith to be reft of his fight by any wandering female? I can collect my own debts, you silly girl, without your help. I was just teaching this fellow a lesson."
Pox quit listening. The tall man had the reach of her, and a heavier blade. She missed her helmet and shield. He had a round iron pot on his head, and heavy bracers on both arms. His black eyes gleamed from under the helmet.
"Eh, the girl from over the mountains. A wild one, I see. I like wild ones."
He grunted as her sword pricked his shoulder.
"I'll tame you, little mountain cat, and then I'll see to him."
He jerked his head at the smith, without giving Pox an opening.
"You will you?" yelled the smith. "By the maker, you're a fine one, if you think you can."
And before Pox realized what he was about, he darted behind the tall man and brought the hammer down on his head with a resounding clang. The tall man sagged to his knees and fell over in a heap. The smith glared at Pox over the crumpled body.
"A sword," he said severely, "is a pitiful weapon, young woman, and only fit for those that don't have the strength for a hammer. It was by the hammer that Sirtig the Maker forged the world on the anvil of time. The hammer will always win with the strength of the faithful behind it."
Pox had dropped the tip of her sword and stood panting.
Yes. Don't forget that."
"No." She took a deep breath and wiped her sword on her leg before sheathing it.
"Not that yours isn't a fine bit of work," the smith went on. "It's just that swords are inferior weapons."
Pox did not feel like arguing with him. She was, however, a bit disgruntled. She'd only tried to help someone.
"Doggle!"
A shout from the alley.
"Need help?"
Pox could see two hefty men, armed with clubs.
Nay. 'Twas a bit of trouble with a fellow from outside, that's all."
The smith sounded smug.
"He'll have a headache, if he wakes at all." "Will you need someone to take him away?" "He's not dead yet. He's still snorting. If this lady will lead his horse back to the inn, I can throw him over."
He turned to Pox.
"If you're going that way, that is."
The men waved and turned back up the alley.
"I was coming here," said Pox, "to get my pony shod, but if—"
The smith suddenly grinned and looked like a different man.
"Oh, that's no problem. He'll keep a bit, just there. I did wonder what you were doing up my alley, to be sure, but if it was on business, then—"
He looked around.
"That your pony, with the star?"
Yes, just a moment.
Pock started toward Star, who stood stiffly nose to nose with the black horse. Both shifted away from her, eyes wide.
Come on, Star, said Pox crossly. She felt the smith was laughing at her. Come on, pony.
She rubbed her thumb on the gold ring. The wildness left Star's eyes, and the pony minced toward her. The black horse, too, lowered his head and stretched his neck.
Catch up that fancy socks if you can, called the smith. Be careful, he's a mean one, but he'll do no good running loose.
Pox caught Star's lead and rubbed the ring again, talking softly to the black. Come on then, big one, come on. I'd like to have one like you someday. The black horse came forward step by slow step until she could reach the reins. She talked on as she led them toward the smithy itself. She could feel the horse's fear trembling in the reins as they neared the building.
Well,
the smith sounded surprised.
You've a rare way with a horse, that you have. I'll take the pony then if you'll hold that one. What sort of shoes? Are you going into the mountains again?
Pox shook her head. No, and she won't be carrying as much weight. I'll be going toward Varela, I think.
Umph.
He had one of Star's feet up, then another.
I'd still say low cocks in front. It'll frost before these wear out.
By the time Star was shod and the shoes paid for, the tall man had grunted and groaned and shifted around on the stones. His eyes were still closed, though, and he had said nothing coherent.
You wanted to help,
said the smith, with a bit of his earlier belligerence.
Suppose you take him back to the inn for me. I'll tell the watch about it, and Joe's can ask me if he wants, and look.
The smith bent down with a grunt and opened the man's belt pouch.
You know he owes me for the shoeing of that devil there. See, I'm taking just what he owes.
Pox nodded, and the smith heaved the man upright and slung him over one broad shoulder.
Now, I think your pony would carry him better than his horse. Can you lead both?
Yes. Pox was reluctant, nonetheless, to go out on the streets leading another man's horse, with the man himself slung unconscious over her pony. But don't you think that, I mean, since you hit him, shouldn't...
A warrior like you doesn't want credit for defeating him?
The smith's voice was scornful, and his look more so. Pox reddened. Nothing and no one in this town had been what she expected.
I'd have thought, the smith continued, that such as you were quite used to hauling bodies around, or did you just leave them?
Pox opened her mouth and shut it again. There seemed nothing to say to that. But as the smith folded the man over Star's back, the Gerd's marshal walked into the courtyard. His glance rested on Pox, then on the smith and his burden.
I heard, Master Doggle, that you had had a disturbance.
The smith stopped, with a hand on the tall man's back where he lay across the pony.
Have you heard that, Marshal? You heard I needed no help?
The marshal glanced at Pox again. The smith caught the look and raised his voice.
No. And I didn't need her either. Is that it? Is she one of your precious yeomen?
No.
I merely wondered.
The smith began tying the man to Star's pack pad with the thongs.
Took you long enough. If I had needed help, I'd have been dead long since.
He turned to Pox.
Now, lady, just you work whatever magic you used on that horse, and take him and this fellow back to the inn for me.
Pox saw the marshal give her a sharp look at the word magic, but he turned back to the smith as that individual kept talking. Pox started to move away, but the marshal raised his hand to stop her.
You seem to think, Marshal, that we'd have no order here without you, Guardsmen. I'm not denying you're a brave bunch, and useful when we have trouble too big for one man or two, but I can hold my own with any single man, and most two or three. As I was telling this lady...
Pox wondered why she had been promoted from girl and female to lady.
As I said to her, the Maker's hammer wielded by a faithful arm will stand over a sword any time. Yet the Maker is said to have had many a blade in the old tales,
said the marshal with a kindling eye.
And you, I know, have made most of the blades in this village.
Oh, aye, that's true, when I have time. And it's a test of the art, that it is, to make a fine, balanced blade that will hold an edge and withstand a hard fight. I won't say against that, but I will say that you can hold your own in a fight, and I'll agree to that, Master Doggle. But the captain did ask me to keep an eye on things, after that last trouble, and the council as well.
The smith had calmed down a lot, and the discussion seemed to Pox to be working over well-plowed ground.
That's so. If it's for the Council, then I might as well tell you all that happened, saves seeing the watch. This fellow came to have his horse shod, that black one there, and quarrelled with my price after. The horse is vicious. Doesn't look it now, I'll admit. But just you try and put a shoe on it. I charged more for it. Always do, as you know. If I'm to risk my head, I must have gain for it.
He paused, and the marshal nodded.
Well, then, he said as much as that I'd no way to make him pay. I tapped his arm to show I meant my words, and he drew on me. Then this lady, I'd not seen her come, she drew as well. I thought they were together and raised a yell. Then it seemed she thought to aid me. But you see, I'd already raised a cry, so I thought I'd let her fight. Was she so eager to? They were well matched. He'd the reach of her and was heavier, but she was quicker and her blade had more quality. Then, well, it's hard to stay out of a fight. So I broke his head with a hammer after all.
The marshal looked at Pox.
I'd have told you our smith can handle himself in a fight. It's not well for newcomers to brawl in the streets.
Before Pox could answer, the smith was defending her.
"'Tis not her fault, Marshal. I'd think you'd be pleased, even if she's not one of yours. She thought she saw an old man."
He rumpled his thin grey hair.
"'Beset by an armed bully. She did well."
Well, I suppose, if you have no complaint against her. The marshal was frowning.
Not at all, not at all. Suppose I had slipped and fallen. She was trying to help. And, you might notice, on the side of that law and order you praise so highly. I've no complaint. In fact, but go on now, and get that lummox out of my yard.
He turned abruptly and dove back into the forge.
I'll walk with you to the inn,
said the marshal to Pox in a neutral tone. Pox followed him down the alley, leading both animals. She kept her thumb firmly on the ring. They were almost to the crossroad when the marshal spoke again.
If I'd defended you, he said without preamble, old Doggle would be lodging a complaint to the Council somehow. He won't agree with me on anything but smithing itself, if he can help it.
Then you aren't angry with me for this?
For going to his aid? Of course not. You might wait another time to see whether your aid is needed, or someday you'll be killed over some little thing, and nothing gained. I'll just have a word with Hebbenford, he said, as they came to the inn door. You take that horse around back.
Pox found herself leading the tall black warhorse to the stable before she quite realized the marshal had taken Star's lead. She heard behind her the innkeeper's voice and the marshal's, and the exclamations of the serving wenches.
Chapter 9. When she came into supper that night, the common room stilled. Someone dropped a dish, and it clattered on the floor. She could hear the rustle of cloth as someone bent to pick it up. Pox carefully did not meet any of the eyes in the room, but picked her way to an empty table. As she sat down, a muted hum resumed. She heard a phrase here and there, but tried to ignore the voices. They all knew, as she did, that the tall man lay unconscious in his room upstairs. She didn't know what stories were going around, but obviously she was in them. She ordered the special dinner, roast beef, mushrooms, hot bread and pastry. She was halfway through it before she remembered that she'd thought of going to weapons practice at the Guardsman's that evening. If she ate all that, she sighed and pushed the dishes away.
"'Is something wrong with your meal?'
asked Hebbenford, pausing by her table. "'No, not at all. I thought I'd go to the Grange this evening, though, and drill, and not on a full stomach.'
"'I see. Well, we can put that by for you, for when you get back, if you like.'
"'Thank you.' Pox had not thought of that. "'I'd like that. This food is too good to waste, if it's not too much trouble.'
"'Not at all. Marshal Sedfer mentioned that you might be visiting this evening. I suppose a warrior must always practice, eh?'
"'Yes, if we want to stay good.' And it's been too long since I had a proper drill.
Fights don't count.
No mistaking the ironic tone. She wanted to answer sharply, but knew better.
No, not really. A fight may not last long enough or call out what you need to practice.
I should drill every day. We did in the Duke's company, but no one can practice well on a full belly.
Pox leaned back and fished into her pouch for the correct silver piece. As she stood and turned to leave, she noticed several of the diners watching her. Although it was full dark, she had no trouble making her way along the street. Uncurtained windows open to the cool evening air spilled light into the lane,
and torches burned at either end of the bridge. Ahead, the Grange was ablaze with light. Torches flared atop the Barton wall as well. As Pox came nearer, she could see that the gate to the Barton and door to the Grange both had sentries before them. She saw two dark shapes enter the Barton ahead of her, pausing to exchange greetings with the sentries. Up close, she realized that the sentries were very young. They carried long billets of wood, and struggled to maintain the dignity of their posts. Pox wondered which entrance to use. She heard the mutter of voices through both. Finally, she decided on the Barton gate. The youth there stared up at her, eyes wide. "I'm Pox Cenarion Dorthan's daughter," she said. "The marshal invited me to come to weapons practice."
"Oh, eh? You're the lady has come over the mountains, eh?"
"Yes," said Pox. "May I pass?"
"Oh, well, if the marshal said, 'Yes, lady, go on in.' Are you really a fighter, like they say?"
This last, as she was nearly past. Pox turned back to him, hand on the hilt of her sword.
"Yes. Did you doubt it?"
"Oh, no, lady, I just wondered, like." Pox turned back to the Barton itself and looked about her. The bare little yard was ringed with torches set high on the wall. One man was stretching, arching his thick back with a grunt. Two more were looking over a pair of pikes, smoothing the shafts with pumice. Out of the side door of the Grange came Ambrose, with an armful of short clubs that reminded Pox of hawks. She heard more men coming in the gate behind her, and a confused sort of clatter and mumble from the Grange itself. She watched, uncertain, as Ambrose dumped the clubs in a heap near the wall. When he straightened, he saw her.
"Ah, Pox Cenarion, welcome. Marshal Sedfer will be glad to see you. Will you come in? Or he'll be out here in a few moments."
"I'll wait," said Pox. "I can warm up out here." She unbuckled her sword and laid it by the wall, then began limbering exercises. Others were busy with the same. One man belched repeatedly. A cloud of onion followed him.